recess, so I will entertain a motion from the council to come out of recess. Second, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Welcome, everyone. This is a special meeting of the Sussex County Council in the form of a workshop with our Board of Adjustments to review a number of issues that have been prepared. At this time, I will turn the meeting over to our county attorney, Eric Moore, who will be conducting the proceeding.
Okay, thank you, Mr. President. And prior to proceeding and before some of the discussion takes place, I'd like to just make a few brief comments. As advertised, this is a workshop between council and Board of Adjustment. As a workshop such as this, the public is allowed to observe, but the dialogue is going to be between the council, the Board of Adjustment, their respective attorneys, and the county staff. The Board of Adjustment, as many of you know, is, and although they're appointed by county council, they are an independent quasi-judicial body that conduct hearings, take sworn testimony, and make final determination on the cases before them. The council does not later hold hearings on the same matters, nor do they hear appeals from Board of Adjustment. The board does not hear just variances. They also hear special use exceptions and appeals to the board on rare occasions. I am hopeful that the discussions today will enlighten us on the percent of the board's hearings that are on variances as opposed to special use exceptions, and furthermore, how many of the variances can be considered those minor matters that may be a result of just a recent survey. For example, I conduct a lot of real estate closings, and it is routine at closings when we get to the settlement table, one of the last things we see is a survey. And we see the survey and we find out that there is a violation of setback. Well, before, when the house was built many, many years ago, there maybe an addition put on, but went out there, would take measured it with new survey techniques. They find out that it is in violation. Those come before your board for variances. If we can discuss during this public session today, how many are those kind of things that maybe we can look at another method of handling? Likewise, how many are things that have been in existence for many, many years that maybe there's another mechanism and they've just been discovered? Is there another mechanism that we can handle those too? It'd also be helpful, and I know Mr. Lank has passed out his sheet, to know what steps the board takes to inform applicants of what their duties are, what kind of burden of proof they have to meet in order to proceed. And also, and very importantly, what suggestions does the board have for the county in ways that maybe the county can pass ordinances or look at things that will make the process much easier and user-friendly and fair. Mr. Burl, the board's attorney, has put together some issues to kind of lay this out for us, and I think that's a good jumping off point for us. So, Mr. Burl, if you want to address some of the items in your memo, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. You've all had the memo, I guess, for a day or two, or at least had an opportunity to look at it. And I'm certainly not here to read this whole thing in the record, but as Everett mentioned, I think it's a good starting off point. It'll give you an indication of what some of the difficulties are that the board faces on every time it has one of its bi-monthly meetings, or two meetings per month, bi-monthly. And I think it'll also help you see by the end of the day that when you look at statistics and you look at numbers and what's been heard and what's been granted and so forth, that the statistics are not giving you the whole story, and there's a lot of things that are not black and white that come before the board. And so I think once we get through some of these issues this afternoon, you'll see a lot of that. One thing that is important to keep in mind is that the Board of Adjustment is not a creature of county code or county ordinance. Boards of Adjustment for all three counties and every municipality in Delaware are created by state law. So although we can discuss different options and different things that we might want to consider amending or changing, in many of these instances, those changes are going to have to be enacted by the state legislature, as it has done for the other two counties on a couple of occasions. we have, as Everett said, three basic cases that come before the Board of Adjustment. The appeal from a county official is the one that is the least likely to come forward. And an example of that might be if Lawrence makes or is asked to interpret a county ordinance, and if one of the parties disagrees with that interpretation, their appeal is to the Board of Adjustment. And then the board convenes a public hearing, hears both sides, and makes a decision. Given Lawrence's familiarity with the code and his experience with that, those cases typically the board typically finds Lawrence's favor, as you might expect. So when you throw those into the numbers, that should not be surprising that you see that the board's upholding the building official or the director on most occasions. The two that come before the board most often are variances and special exceptions. In Sussex County, the board is authorized to consider what are called area variances, and those are basically dimensional kinds of things. So the rule of thumb I always use is if you can reduce it to a number, you're probably talking about an area variance, something like a variance from a setback, a height, distance between structures, things of that nature that can get reduced to numbers. Oddly, in Newcastle and Kent County, there is also an animal called a use variance, which has never been given to the Sussex County Board of Adjustment. We have instead what are called special use exceptions. As I noted in the memo, these are uses which can be approved for specific zoning areas, but which the code has already pre-approved. So in other words, one of the more common examples we get is to put a daycare center in a residential neighborhood. That's actually a permitted use under the AR ordinance, but it does require a special exception. And so when someone wanting the daycare center comes before the board, they have to show that their use, which is a permitted one, isn't going to damage or affect adversely other properties. And the board doesn't have a lot of discretion with those uses. They are all spelled out in the code. Anything beyond that typically comes to you guys by way of a conditional use. So if somebody wants a borrow pit in the middle of a subdivision, they obviously can't come to the board for that. They would come before you. So the special use exceptions have a very or much lower standard or threshold than does the area variance, which requires proving an exceptional practical difficulty. We typically have 2, 3, maybe even more special use exceptions at every meeting. So out of, for example, last night's agenda, we had 7 new cases. 3 of them were special use exceptions, and they were all approved. So sometimes when you hear somebody say, well, gee, they're up to their old tricks again, they're passing everything, you have to look at what the case is involved, because you would expect that special use exceptions are, by and large, going to be granted. They are necessary in many instances to what's going on. They're helpful to folks like a daycare center, and they're already essentially pre-approved by the Sussex Code. What I've done then throughout the rest of the memo is to kind of break down some of the different kinds of cases for us to consider.
Rick, you just gave the one example, 7 cases last night, I believe you said, 3 of them special use. Is that roughly how it runs, almost half?
It's close to that, probably a few less than half for special uses. I'll tell you what, we had 3 last night, and I'll tell you what one was. One was the daycare center. The other was Cape and Lopen School District applying to use a pre-manufactured structure as an extra classroom. Apparently the schools are already overcrowded. They've only been there 4 years or something, but they came before the board. They need a special use exception to use that as a temporary classroom until the state funding comes about, and when they can actually add on, which is certainly their preference. And the third one was a replacement of an existing billboard. Billboard was already in place. It structurally had become unsound, somewhat unsafe, and the company wanted to come in just to put up the same billboard, same place. Same size, just to put in a new, safer structure. So those were 3 good examples that come up. Probably the one that we get most often was not before the board last night, but that's the one that's referenced elsewhere in the memo. It's the use of a manufactured home as a second dwelling on a property. We typically see those in instances in which somebody's parents or in-laws are getting along in years, they need some special care, maybe help getting the right medications or transportation, getting cooking, things of that nature. And individuals can apply for special use exceptions to have those dwellings for certain periods of time. And again, those are typically granted by the board because, frankly, if they're not granted, then mom or dad are going to end up in a nursing home. And that's not only something that most people don't want, it's in this day and age an incredibly expensive proposition. Some of them are, some are more a little bit more, what I want to say, intrusive. Some of the biggest hearings I think the board's had over the years are regarding things like asphalt plants and concrete smashing factories. I'm not even sure what the right term is, but those generate a little bit more interest. But again, those would not be something that would be pre-permitted in a residential zone, for example. Those are typically permitted only in, I'll defer to Lawrence, but certainly in commercial, industrial, those kinds of districts. One of the difficulties, and I'll hit this before we get into the specifics, but I have made this observation in my general comments. We have a problem with people coming before the board who just simply aren't prepared. We've struggled with that for years. Now when the individual fills out an application, they get a pre-printed copy of the standards that Lawrence and his folks give out. A couple of years ago, Bud Ricker and I put together a series of questions. I think they're in that additional handout that was given to you, just to try to trigger some of these folks to think of different things and things that might be in support of their applications. Not necessarily everything that they can think of or all that they need to do, but just to try and get their minds moving at least. And yet every meeting, inevitably, we have one or two applicants that come before the board and they walk up to the podium with a blank look on their face, and they're just completely unprepared. And I don't know what more we can do or the county can do to alert them to the fact that this is a quasi-judicial hearing they're going before, and they have certain burdens that they have to meet when they come before the board.
Couldn't Ricky just defer on it and leave the record open and tell them, put a reschedule?
Well,
as opposed to shooting from the hip and...
The problem, and again, if we ask questions, of course, you're putting them on the spot, and they're having a tough time responding there. If we leave it open, sure, everybody comes back another week, but that includes everybody on both sides if there's opposition. And is that unfair to the opposition if they've come prepared and the applicant doesn't? I'm not sure.
It'll probably create a massive backlog as well.
What is your procedure now? Does the chair tend to ask questions of the applicant? So if the applicant comes to the podium, they're pro se, meaning they don't have an attorney, does the chair tend to ask questions kind of through that list?
I think it's open to everybody.
Every member.
Dale offers it up to all the other members, and then he himself can ask questions. So it's, anybody who wants to talk,
Rick,
can.
Do you do any leading with any questions?
Some. I've tried not to get too involved in factual questions simply because I perceive the attorney's role to be more toward the legal end. So I might ask a question that's designed to help me decide from a legal standpoint if there's an issue or if it's been resolved. But by and large, I prefer to leave the factual questions to the board members.
Wouldn't maybe a little more maybe of your input in case things get challenged and things like this, that you're establishing a good record, that there's some key points that are brought out in every application. So if the members here say don't ask a certain question that you think you would like to have, put on as a record. Do you see any problem with you leading the applicant into a certain direction so that there's a certain, and it also might trigger other questions? But
sometimes I do, George.
I just think with you sitting there, there ought to be some kind of.
Here's the other side of that. If I ask a question and it elicits a certain response, that can sometimes be used against us. In other words,
we pay you to ask the right question.
But I can't. You don't pay me to twist their arm to make the right answer. The problem is, if I ask a question that I think is designed to show, just for example, that the hardship or the difficulty has been self-created
Right.
And the board doesn't pick up on that, the opponents might. And then all I've done is kind of make the case for the opposition.
Well, if the chair or someone were asking the questions, you know, I think maybe the more appropriate the chair. It's unlike the hearings that we do in county council because I conduct the hearings. In this case, the chairman is actually conducting the hearings, and Mr. Burrow is there to give legal advice. So if the chair would ask the questions.
Well, we've had a tradition, I think, of our attorneys at the county level, and Vance, tell me if I'm wrong, but anyway, that they have led the applicants into a questioning that will lead to responses that we need to have on a record in case we're all sitting there silent someday. And so I mean, I don't have any problem, Rick, with you. And years ago, I think Witzel had a checklist. I don't know where that is anymore, but we had a checklist Witzel had provided us all with when he was a county attorney to hit each of these points. And I see you got rules of standards and all this other stuff. I mean, do you follow this? And do they have to just maybe meet one of these standards, any of the standards? Or?
Well, they're supposed to meet all of them. And I will say, John, who's got his hand raised dutifully,
your turn.
Often does ask those questions.
If anyone that's attended the meeting knows I'm tend to be a bit vocal and ask questions.
I know the field.
And whenever an applicant's before us, I'm listening to hear how they're addressing the standards. Mm-hmm. Typically, I'll ask those direct questions to get them, to answer those questions. And quite frankly, I'll even hand them a paper because a lot of them don't even, for whatever reason, they haven't read the application or whatever the case is, don't understand what the burden is on them. And that's they have to meet all five standards.
Okay.
It's not just one. And the typical standard that is rarely met is that it cannot have been created by the applicant. Okay. Most everybody that comes before us, they've created the problem. So we've had been an understanding forgiving board. And that's the way it was when I came on the board 18 years ago. We've continued that process. It certainly keeps your friends from ringing on a regular basis. And the biggest problem, as Rick had said earlier on, people don't understand the burden on them.
Right.
And so.
Well, I think we also have an obligation to help the applicant, not tell them what to say, but to give them the right questions. I don't have any problem with somebody having a list of questions you ask every one of them. Everyone that comes up that, in other words, as opposed to maybe one day you hit a few of them or whatever, I don't know how the rest of you all operate, but I just think I wouldn't mind having the attorney, going down if there's some that were not asked, make sure they were asked.
They're not easy questions to answer without having given some considerable thought.
I understand. That's why I said earlier, if there's a backlog, there's a backlog, but I just say that if they aren't prepared somehow, I don't think it's wise for the county then to be making decisions or the board making decisions on decisions or on applications that are just poorly presented and then decisions made on that poor information that was given, and then a lot of times you might get a poor decision.
Then I would perhaps suggest that it start when the process starts, when they come in for an application, that somebody sit down and explain to them.
I wouldn't have any problem.
And here's the burden that you're charged with, and you have to meet these standards and be prepared to prove those.
I mean, we still have people like that in front of us that are ill prepared.
Sure.
Right.
But we have a majority.
But we try to, we've had a history with our attorneys we've had have always, like Gene and stuff, have stepped in and led. Jim did it, and Everett's doing it. So that I think they want to make sure that if there is any challenges, that these right questions were asked. So I don't have any, I think there needs to be. Process somehow.
There have been times where I've asked leading questions to an applicant, shaking my head. Yes, that's the right thing
to do.
And they're still.
That's right. There's only so far you can go.
Are not most of these people represented by attorney?
No, most of them, because that's always been the practice, but they probably should be.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
You're just adding to a terrible expense on an issue sometimes that isn't that grave of an issue, that we need to have an attorney unless it's very, you know, something really important.
And maybe the variance isn't necessary.
I was looking at the, you know, the very first thing I see here on this memo, and I think that's probably the key thing, and I could add a word there, an opinion in that. And I see here that says here that everything is not black and white. And I was taught a long time ago about opinions. Of course, you guys all know what opinion is.
Everybody's got
it. But that doesn't really tell us what opinion is. Opinion is somewhere between ignorance and knowledge. And when you know how much knowledge is in these opinions. And most of us are lacking of all the knowledge we need, regardless who you are. I don't care who it is. I'm certainly learning every day. The last one that we had a court case on, and I personally went and looked at it, Mr. King's, and I personally would have ruled that way. So it came before the council. I went out and looked no more than a flagpole standing there with a thing way out of sight up in the air near his house within 3 feet. I thought it was sort of silly to rule it any other way. So I've heard so much said we're losing in court case. So that would have been one that I would have ruled. If it had been me, I would have made the same decision you guys made on that. So I'm not here to say you're making bad decisions. And in fact, when I look at your record, when you all lost out of how many hundreds it was that you've had appeals and all these things, and probably I could have said instead of 88% approval, maybe you ought to move up to 90 adjustments. But I say this, a board adjustment to me is making adjustments. That's what you're there for.
Exceptions.
And you're there, to work out a difference between two people, mostly, with their neighbors. And if you can make those decisions and get out of there with good results, then I can say I can pat you on the back, and this is what it's about. We're not tired of We're not going to stand down a stiff road here or write to the ordinance and say this is what we've got to do. If we're going to do that, we'll just do away with this board and come right back to the council, and we'll make those decisions. But I say the board adjustment works in a room of just making adjustments. And I think that's what I expect from you. I don't know what other people expect from you, but that's just what I expect.
Yes. Sam, you mentioned one thing that was pretty interesting, because that decision for some reason got a lot of publicity, the one that was reversed.
Right.
And 2 weeks ago, there was another decision by the same judge that supported the board's decision in an entirely different case, and one in which they had denied the application. I haven't seen a word about that in the press.
No.
I thought that's rather interesting.
Well, those of you that criticize, I always say, if you're without sin, cast the first stone. And most of these people that want to cast stones certainly are not, probably in many cases, as smart as you guys are, maybe even I have any more knowledge about such. Most people talk from the lower side or the ignorant side. And when the ball's put in their court, they can always do better, something better to us, hand it to them. Most time I find they're not.
You know, I just appreciate that the press would print the truth. For example, looking at the headline article from a few weeks ago, it was quoted from a lady that said there are at least 5 requirements to the county code, and they ignore them every time. And if she looks at the record, she'd see that every motion I make, I address every standard of granting the variance. So, unfortunately,
well, you heard the old saying about paper. You only believe half what you see, and nothing you read. So in that case, that's just about the case there.
I guess I was quite naive, and you know, I delivered this paper when I was 14, 12 and 14. And I always thought they printed the truth, but I've learned otherwise.
Going to your point, Mr. Cole, If Mr. Burrell to ask questions would not be unlike a judge in a case where the person was appearing before the judge without an attorney, and the judge would ask some questions. And I think certainly Mr. Burrell could look at those in that same format.
Well, here's what I see, guys, that happened in the years I've been with the county council. When there's no opposition, there's a tendency to go, boom, you know. And then when there is opposition, we all sit back and look thoughtful and we defer. And we come back, and many of them again were still approved. I mean, we approve. It seems to me when I look at that list, when it looks like 10% get approved. I mean, get denied.
And again, Mr. Cole, we do that at your lecture.
I know that. Oh, I know that. I understand. But I'm just saying, at the with 10%, I've always understood that variances and an adjustment, they should be few. And, you know, it seems like the numbers should be reversed or something. Anyway, I think when Sam talks about that, you know, the appearance of everybody is happy after they leave and you give a decision, you know. No. I think that what you find is, because so many people come in front without legal help, that if the decision goes against them and there's some opposition, neighbors or whatever, they got to weigh out, can I afford it? Now I have to go to court. I got to hire an attorney. It can cost me $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, God knows what, right? And you just got to weigh it out. And some people just say, you know, I'm going to have to eat this. I don't read this to say that, you know, everybody comes out of this happy when a certain decision is made. I think there's always going to be somebody dissatisfied. And I know many times applicants come in with attorneys. And I've seen in front of us for years the opposition without attorneys. They're the novices. They don't know the right questions to ask. That's why I think you need to help the opposition, because the applicants many times are represented. And we work for the people of this county, and I think when people come in front of us without legal representation, our county attorney, don't side with them or take sides. But if there's questions that should be asked or they should be, you know, led to, do it. Because I know many people call me up after a decision made. I just can't go to court. I'd love to, but I can't do it. Now you get a group of homeowners of a community, maybe they can team up. But individuals can't afford the process the way it's set up with the fees that could be associated. So that's why I think our decisions are so important. And I've been critical of Sussex County Council too over the years about how they operate too. So don't take it personally.
One of the things,
especially my cousin.
Well, so the thing is, now George made a statement here, but I like to be more specific. Do you have a specific case that you think they messed up on?
No, I'm just saying.
I mean, I can paint this.
I do.
Well, you're not in this discussion.
I understand. Yeah.
But I don't like painting with broad brushes. Right.
I didn't just paint with
broad brushes. Well, I think you did.
Okay. We'll have that discussion later.
Why don't we go and let Mr. Burrell go ahead and finish his memo and go through the different things.
Can I ask one question? I've been confused. I've been on the board for 8 years, and I'm really confused now what the purpose of this board is. I thought a lot of people can't meet the five standards.
Right.
I thought that was our job. So look, they meet three, we can prove that. But they can't meet the five, so another one. Like Sam said, that when you go in, if they can't meet five standards, hit that door, you don't need the door.
Well, I don't know anybody who said they had to meet the five standards. Is that something?
The law.
So
is our job, if they don't meet the five standards, deny everything without the back?
Yes.
They come in there and deny it?
Yes.
Well, how would you feel is a foot variance or something like that, a little bit off, and they don't meet that five standard, then I'm going to make the entire corner of the house off. I don't understand. You know, a lot of people can't meet five standards. And that's where I think that's why the Board of Adjustment is set up for, to adjust.
We got a minimal amount of relief that before.
Yeah.
Are
we wrong doing that or not?
Let me just jump in here.
Explain the law.
I think what Brent is asking is maybe come clear as we get into some of these more specific categories. I think this will help if we do it this way. For example, the next one on the list is what I call long-standing encroachments. And I'll give you an example because we had one come up last night. House was built in 1968, which predated zoning. And it happened to be built on one side into what later became the setback. So it's encroaching once the setbacks get imposed by about 3 or 4 feet, which is grandfathered because it was a later enacted law. But in 1992, the owner of the property built a second story. And because that is an increasing the degree of encroachment, a variance would have been required at that time. Excuse me. It was overlooked. The second story exists for now another, 20 years almost since 1992. The now owner of the property, current owner of the property, discovers that their house is sinking. It may have been because they put a second floor on, but in any event, they need to replace their entire foundation. So they come into the county to get a building permit to do that. Lo and behold, there's a discovery that the second floor was built 20 years ago or 19 years ago without a permit, essentially illegally. So what do we do? That was one of the cases before the board last night, folks asking for basically to validate an encroachment that existed for 20 years. Same kind of thing that Everett mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, where he often finds, as most real estate attorneys do, encroachments which have existed for some time were just never discovered because surveys weren't always done, things of that nature. I don't think you would have wanted the board to deny that application to tell these people to take off their second floor.
Yeah, on that case, you would. Does the law require meeting those five standards on that particular type
yes,
of case?
Sir. Yes, sir.
Okay,
there's no distinction.
And that one in particular, met with the most difficult, was it created by the applicant? No, the applicant's mother did the
right. Well, I think common sense and logic would steer you in the right direction. Now, if that had happened a year ago, how would you have all felt about that?
A year ago?
If the addition and everything, not like the...
Let me use a different example, okay, because this whatever. Has come up from time to time. There's a garage or an outbuilding of some sort. Let's keep it separate from the main dwelling. But an outbuilding has been put up, garage, say one of those pole buildings that encroaches by 5 or 6 feet and is discovered later. It's a lot easier to make them move that. And I guess, but that's the question: Are we going to tell somebody who's relied over the years that assumed that was valid? Are we going to make them move that? They can't make that same argument that the people with the second floor did. I mean, they can reasonably use that property without a garage, which is one of the standards for the variance. So somebody contesting that one could point to that section and say, "Look, you don't need a garage. A lot of people don't have garages. You shouldn't have it because it's there illegally. It's encroaching. Should they be required to remove that garage after 18 years, 16 years?
Yeah, I mean, I can see us weighing. I mean, I would do it at our level, weighing out the years and time and all that stuff is part of.
And that's what I mean about gray areas. It's not a black and white situation.
Right, but I've also seen where like a contractor goes and does something.
So we're going to tear the garage down, George?
No. It was 16. He was saying.
Except early on, we had a contractor that was cited for building a foot into the setback. It was a through lot in the development. And by the time he got before the board, he had the whole house shelled, and he was told to stop building. And so we denied his request. He appealed it. The judge overturned our decision because we had not dotted our I's and crossed our T's. However, the judge also found that he was encroaching on the reverse side. He came back, had someone else mislead us in thinking that they were going to buy the property and request the variance. We dotted our I's and crossed our T's. Mm-hmm. And he had to tear off a foot, a 70-foot house. But it was blatant disregard for
I think those are obvious, for the board to go. There was a complaint outside of Millville about some billboards, and it was they look like they should be on I-95, some of these billboards on some of these two-lane roads, and just because there's no opposition and different things. And some of them, somebody told me one of them was granted, I forget how many, variances, just so they could put these big billboards in. And I'm just wondering, how do you get at those kind of decisions?
Well, the direction from the council before was much more open, and it seems that folks have a different direction, and it's... We're going 2 years that you've been assembled together, and we haven't had a directive. I'm glad we're having this meeting.
And why don't we let Rick, because he does have later in his memo issue too.
Right.
But I don't know if there's any more comments on this. These long-standing variances, long-standing encroachments, I think you're going to see most of them passed and improved, because I don't think anybody wants to go to a property owner and say, I'm sorry, that thing's been there for 15 years, but now it's been discovered, we're going to make it take it off.
I don't think anybody would disagree with the long-standing encroachments.
All right. Next one is something I call minor encroachments, and it is not uncommon for us to get variance requests of as little as 1 inch, 2 inches, 0.1 foot. In some instances, I think Everett might have mentioned this, that may be a function of just having better survey techniques and equipment these days than they used to, or maybe the surveyor leaned a little bit to his right when he did it. Sometimes we get anything up to 1 inch on up to a foot. When you're talking about the 15 to 30 foot setback, a foot is not all that much. Something you probably wouldn't be able to discern just looking at it in the field. There are statutes on the books which have given Newcastle and Kent County, as well as all the municipalities in Delaware,
all
the power, if they want to use it.
How come we were left out?
Well, I'm not sure. Some of it might have been just the folks up in Dover. But also, and I'll let Warren speak for himself, but he has been a little bit hesitant to take on that responsibility because he thought that a lot of developers might take advantage of it. They'd all come in and build, you know, within 9 feet instead of 10 feet, and then look for that over-the-counter kind of variance.
Yeah, what Rick's referring to in Newcastle, referring to as an administrative variance, whereby if it's less than a foot, the administration can approve it.
Or deny it.
And the ordinance says may. And what we saw there was that with the influence of big developers coming in doing track houses, the fear was that all of a sudden you could require 10 feet, but all of a sudden one of them being built at 9 because they thought they could use the administrative variance. So we didn't give consideration, spent 6 or 8 years ago, to try to get.
Do you know if the other counties are having that problem that you thought might?
Not really. It's an occasional variance in the administration.
Is it something?
It's something that was, could have been there years ago, and the survey comes in again, and we see it on survey.
Do you see any problem with us opposing it, the county not, you know, getting our lobbyists up?
Not like I thought it would be six or eight years ago.
Okay.
And we could have the language that he doesn't have to approve it. If he sees there's an abuse, one contractor coming in, then it would still have to come before
that
the board.
Word shall and
that's
may.
Right.
Yeah, may.
Right.
May. The may word would be.
May.
Right. Okay, well.
Work there.
Yeah, I mean, these little tiny variances, I don't think I remember in 12 years, I don't think there's ever been a denial of a 3-inch.
And how many of those do you get a year?
More than you think.
That's an easy mistake. A big mistake is hard. Yeah.
And as Mrs. Deaver said, it's really a waste for that to come before the board.
Well, we ought to change it.
Do you think that is 10, maybe 10% coming before you?
A minor variance? I'd say
10%. Easy.
Yeah. Okay, well, that could free up some space to maybe defer on the
okay, so, and, but that, again, that's one of those things I mentioned early on. That takes a legislative enactment up in Dover, but they've done it for everybody else. I can't imagine that would be.
Everett can take a note of that, and we'll talk about it in one of our public sessions because that seems to make sense.
Okay. Next area I call minor subdivisions. Every subdivision request doesn't have to go before P&Z. You can, as you probably all know, you can kind of lop off little pieces and lots here and there. What we get, I won't say frequently, but certainly on a regular basis, is somebody with a large tract of land who wants to chop off maybe 2 or 3 half-acre or 3/4-acre, 1-acre lots for their children, oftentimes. The difficulty is that every lot has to have 150 feet of road frontage, and then the residual property has to still be left with that. And we often get a situation where the property owner has the acreage but not the frontage, and so he or she comes in for variances from those road frontages and maybe wants to reduce them all to 100 feet or to 75 feet or something along those lines. It makes sense when they're doing it for their children, but of course there's no way for the county to ever police that, and so we get a lot of applications. And some of these people have owned this farmland or tracts of land for a couple of hundred years, or it's been in the family for a couple of hundred years. They foresee an entitlement to be able to give that to their children in one way or another. The board has wrestled with those things, but have oftentimes granted those because, frankly, they are for family members and they make a good case. But realistically, I'm not sure they're always meeting the standards.
The one on Route 24 is an example.
You can pull out any tax map and all are probably fine.
By the new fire station.
The reason I put this in there, though, is because when they start getting denied, you guys are going to get the phone calls at dinner time, not us. And I want to make sure that.
They never expire. They never expire.
No, they don't. They don't. These are permanent divisions.
Yeah, yeah. We've seen extremes to, you know, people trying to escape the subdivision process and create a minor subdivision through the court.
So the reason I put this in there is I would kind of like to get the council's consensus, if not today, at least at some point, on your feelings on that. Because if the board stops granting those and really enforces the restrictions or enforces the code 100% across the board, they're gonna be a lot of denials, and these constituents of yours are gonna come to your doors knocking.
How do you know whether it's for family or just an economic?
Well, we don't. They testify under oath, and we tend to believe them unless they're obvious. There's no way to keep it that way.
Yeah.
As Everett said, well, maybe, you know, son gets one lot and gets married, then gets divorced and has to be sold to take care of things.
Or their intent is to do it for the family, then things change.
Made to expire, though.
Well, no, you can't. Once the house is built there,
it's hard to.
No, if they're not used.
Well, they do have a year.
Well, there is a year limit on these things.
But you have a year to record.
To record the subdivision, right?
To record, but then it's
torture.
And that doesn't happen very often.
Most of them are done. The majority is done for family, and they want to record it, and it could be for their grandchildren. They're just trying to establish something for that grandchild or child, whatever,
right,
for future use, not for immediate use. And typically what you get is, probably the majority of them is only for one lot. But there are some there too, maybe three.
Yeah,
most of them are for singles. But.
So we, this is one of those areas where we do want you to...
Some directives.
Yeah, give some directions.
Why is it better to allow it to be less than 150 foot frontage? Why is that better?
States and ingress and egress.
No, why is it better to just, in other words, to allow it to be 100 foot or 75 foot?
Why is it better?
Yeah, why not just stick to the 150 foot?
Well, that's my question. If we keep to the 150 feet, in a lot of instances, they're not going to be able to subdivide the way they want to because they just don't have enough frontage.
I believe it was a memorandum of understanding we have with the state, or is it state?
Del dot
regs or something. Anyway, it was 150 feet on these rural roads so that they wouldn't have all these driveways coming out.
Well, it's in the code, 150 feet.
Well, it was changed after working with Del dot to try to establish the difference between lots along public roads versus lots on the interior.
Right, right.
Yeah, that was one. And they said 150 is reasonable because they're only approving in 90% of the cases an entrance serving two lots.
We
so
share driveways.
They got a bigger pipe with two driveways.
Right.
Going off either direction, but they don't have a driveway shared. It's actually two pipes
combined.
Side by side, or two driveways side by side.
But that is now in our ordinance. The 150 feet is part of our ordinance, which is law. So we're
that's why they're asking for a variance from the 150. Okay. Right.
A couple questions. How many of those are here?
Many.
It's
10 to 20%.
10 to 20% mm-hmm. easy.
And all those driveways coming out on a road like Route 24.
And how many are approved?
One of the problems
is it 90% approved?
I'd say most of them.
See, years ago, before council changed the ordinance to allow double wide mobile homes on 3/4 acres, the rule was a mobile home on 5 acres or more. So farmers strip developed. No, I'm not picking on farmers, but they strip developed in 5 acre segments. So now all of a sudden you have a home or a mobile home with 5 acres, and you know a family member wants to build on the back 2.5. You know, so we do require they have, as a state request, a combined drive that limits some of that access.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, it's there's a, if you look at the tax maps, you see a lot of narrow lots.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, the runway is difficult.
It's
shared driveway.
Driveway.
They're all 150 feet wide.
Yes.
And 1,800 foot deep.
Combined or shared.
Mm-hmm.
You get 5 acres.
Now that sounds
simple. Right.
Exactly.
Go start
Yeah.
I used to like that. I didn't want to change it.
Now, but we're talking about driveways, you know, put sure in driveways and all that. Let's think about how silly this really is. You've got the road going around here, says your table here. If I got a carport out of 25 feet, what's the difference in all come down here and pull out here? Same amount of cars there to the highway. I don't care which way you go. Unless you put highway out there that you can regress and come either way. That's the only benefit you can have. If you don't have that, it's silliness to talk about sending 5 feet, 100 feet, or 200 feet. It's all the same. You've got the same traffic going on the highway.
The difficulty from Del Dot was the fact that it every entrance disrupts drainage. About 150 they can work with.
If you want to say you don't want to put in a culvert, then that's another story.
That's a culvert in the ditch.
The trouble is one thing leads to another, it's all linked together, and we all discussed this for years, and I think that in rural Sussex County, 150 was felt to be
the
minimal frontage that a rural lot ought to have,
mm-hmm.
and so that's not in towns like Rehoboth has 50-foot lots, but a whole different scenario. So out in rural Sussex County,
agricultural residential.
Right. We thought 150 3/4 acres of a lot or three-quarter acre with 150 frontage was appropriate, and that's how we ended up with it.
Do you remember when Ty came for to count you went 300 feet?
Who?
The 40 counts.
I don't know. That's what we adopted. I don't care about how what we talked about before. Well, what we have today is what we have. So we would have to undo that, but that's our county ordinance, which is law. We got to follow.
Go ahead.
I guess I'm thinking that if we cut you guys off at 150, you don't approve any more of those. A property owner's option would be to go for a subdivision.
With a street.
With a street.
Mm-hmm.
And that would require stormwater management. That would require a certain standard of the street. Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't you want stormwater management?
Well, I'll add it to the cost.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Well, yeah, sure. Flooding problem. Why wouldn't you want stormwater management?
Well, in general,
probably that's that, and we see more on the east side of the county, the flooding being more of an issue than the west side.
Seaford had a little bit of it.
Well, yeah, as it's, yeah.
Well, I sort of on the Soil Conservation Board, and she's asked a question, I guess it's proper to answer it. By digging a hole in the ground does not solve stormwater management. It just solves flooding. Stormwater management, I can dig a hole here big in this room, I can take it to a place that's three times bigger than this room, and twice as deep. And I can, and ever, that was your uncle's place, take it right down and show you water was deeper than it was on the higher this table, right down the room. Had a whole lot bigger than that place you want to go. Biggest stormwater management you can get, flooding. Holes is not the answer. You've got to have drainages. So people tells me, in fact, I was talking to Tom Omar the other day. He said, Sam, I'm beginning to come around thinking like you're saying.
Oh, we're in trouble.
Stormwater management is not. Well, Joan, we can be in trouble thinking like you, too, so who knows?
Well, we've got state regulations right now that require stormwater management. So
not on single homes, and that's what Vance is bringing attention here.
Right.
We are trying to make hardships on people. If that's what our goal is here, then we can follow some people's ideas here.
Well, hardship is when they call up because they're flooded and they need help.
Well, that's not going to solve the problem.
On the minor subdivisions, we just discussed the possibility of having an administrative type of variance. Is it a possibility, something advisable, look at a minor subdivision with certain rules that could also be handled at the administrative level? So that it does not come before the board to do this.
Why don't you sit down with Lawrence and look at where throughout the whole order, where can we do, or where would you as a group or our professionals advise us to look to these areas for administrative corrections? And then it would take those off of their thing and it would take it out of the mix. So I mean I think that makes a lot of sense. And minor subdivisions, talked about 1-4. I mean, just so why don't we look to those? What could we do? Handle through administrative, the 1-inch, the 2-inch, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I think we're making some progress. So.
We already have in the pending public hearing, already been held a year ago on the minor subdivisions for up to 3 lots, I think it was. Yeah.
All right, well, maybe we'll revisit that.
Real popular a year ago.
What was real popular a year ago?
Up to 3 lots.
It was up to 3.
Yeah.
Commission does a 3-lot maximum process, which counts the residual parcels. So really you're creating 2 plus whatever's left. Because the driveway or roads already exist, and all you're doing is subdividing a piece off of it.
So is that what these folks would start to use if they were being non-
If they didn't have the right to variance.
If they didn't have the right to variance, it would then...
creation of a 50-foot right-of-way to create a street to serve whatever lot they're trying to create. And we see some parts that we have to tell them, no, it just won't work. We had one the other day.
Not enough room, not enough space. Right?
We had a chicken house. We had a house already. He wanted to go around a chicken house behind it and back to the back to try to get a lot for his son, but he wanted to retain as much acres as he could hold. And we tried to put a lot in where we put it.
I guess he didn't like that son.
Tough part.
Well, that 3-lot subdivision being done at the administrative level, I think it's a good idea.
So that may be the recourse for these folks if we start cutting them off.
It could be if you start cutting them off for the variance on the width, then they have another method they can apply.
Or just whether it be administrative or take that out of the process. Just take it out of the variance situation altogether. Make it
administration.
Well, we ought to look what can we take out? Let's take out as much as we can.
I say that because this is just a troublesome area for the board. I see it all the time. Nobody wants to tell somebody who's owned this property for 100 years that they can't carve out lots for their children. Have their children.
But we also have people who have just stepped into the process and just owned it a couple of years and doing the same thing. So we don't.
Yeah, and that
you can't really make part of your reasoning that they've owned it for 100 years.
No, that's correct. But that's why they're troublesome. If you start cracking down on all of them, you
catch
crack down
right.
on those all who are probably purely innocent and have good motives. And,
right. But if the defense of the board in some of those processes for the variance in which the board asked. They look at the tax map that's in front of them. They can see lots that are already 100 foot wide in the immediate neighborhood. And that, sometimes in those cases, they can justify because there are already lots of that size right there. Mm-hmm. And that plus
it's compatible with the surrounding.
Compatible with the neighborhood, sort of. And in some cases, they're all 200 foot or bigger. Then it's not difficult to operate.
And then those people get mad that they get these little dinky lots in their
right.
neighborhood where they
get, then you get more objection from the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Okay, next area was the billboards. And I know, George, you've been on the council long enough. You probably remember when you guys had those.
Yes, would you be handing out snacks?
And when that was done, when it was handed over to the board, it at least included the limitation that billboards are only permitted in commercial areas, so we don't have the concern about those coming up in residential areas or some of these other areas. The standard for granting a variance or for the special use exception, which the billboards require, is that they not adversely affect neighboring properties. And frankly, most of them, being built in commercial areas, have a pretty easy time showing that. Somebody comes into Route 1 and wants to put up a billboard.
Well, Route 1's different than, they take, say, 26, 24, where we have, or 9. Some of these roads, we had spot zoning years ago and stuff zoned commercial all over the place scattered around. Next thing you know, you get a billboard, and it looks like a should belong on 13 or a dual highway.
But keep in mind, George, the standard for this is a very low
one. But stacked, I know. But
does it? Let's talk about the single one first.
The single one first.
The permitted billboard is going to be 10 by 30.
Right.
One-sided, set back from the road appropriately, set back from other structures, houses and so forth, 300 feet.
And church school.
State property, 300 feet. And from another billboard, correct?
Right.
From another billboard. So that's your standard billboard, and somebody comes in. Typically, it's one of the companies, Clear Channel or whatever, and their application is for a billboard at this location that will meet all these other setbacks and so forth. And the only standard they have to prove is that it's not going to adversely affect adjacent or neighboring properties. And again, which is a relatively simple
standard.
Yeah.
Right.
So they go in. The difficulty we're running into,
they want
and I've seen this just within the last year, they want multiple billboards, they want them higher than the others so they can be seen closer to the road, double-sided.
Dale Dukes and I argued years ago. See, I kept saying that if your commercial building had a setback of, 30 or 40 feet, was it 40 feet? 60 feet is what now?
It'd be 40 now.
40, when it was 40. We were arguing this when it was 40. I said, you got a lineup of businesses and stuff, and we want to permit a billboard, then to go 25 feet. In other words, when you put the billboard 25 feet up, it may help your commercial property, but it may negatively affect the next guy. And I just said, as big as they are, they ought to be back lined up at least with the building setbacks. But Dale won that argument back in those days, and so we have billboards, big ones, stacked now, 25 feet from the road.
You won the argument because the state law says 25.
Yeah.
Right, we just went to 25 feet, which I just think that's inappropriate in most of our areas where, again, my business could be next to a guy and I'm looking, this guy's got this billboard and just blocks and hurts my business. So I think we shouldn't do things and have ordinances that do that. And I know that does it, but that's another story. We'd have to change the ordinance. But my concern is I ride around, I see billboards that are on 26, like great. I go buy them 3 or 4 times and a bunch of new ones hopped up and more people, how the heck did this happen? And then I hear there was all these variants granted for billboards. You know what I'm saying? Was it because nobody showed up?
there is rarely a lot of opposition. I know that,
but that's not a good reason to say yes. Well,
and that's part of their justification. I understand that.
Part of their justification for requesting more is because some of those monopoles are $100,000.
I don't care.
It's
not my fault.
Some of the times are to replace old buildings.
Some of the other replaced the old
right.
wooden ones
right.
with a new monopole. Now that one that went down on 26 you're talking about, now towards those people, that gentleman, he bought 17 acres of ground. He spent a year and a half with the county, coming in, doing survey after survey. He had met all the county requirements. He just heard 300 feet between the schools and churches, and it's 25 foot height, 25 feet back from the road, 50 feet on the side. And he met with the office. They went through everything, walked this gentleman through it. $1,100 and get his application for that. And after he did it, didn't have any opposition, he met everything. What would you do then?
Well, okay, but did he get a stack billboard? Did you give him a
No, he didn't get
a stack.
He just wanted the regular billboard, the monopole.
That doesn't bother me so much. It's sometimes when I go by and see the glaring, huge ones, the oversized ones on some of these county two-lane roads and stuff.
But I've got to speak on behalf of the office. They make sure.
Well, yeah, but
there's 98% or 90% of those applications in Georgia come in. The work is already done. They always make sure that the neighborhoods
I just
want to explain it. You got a couple of questions earlier. I want to make sure.
Yeah. That issue can certainly be regulated through ordinance.
Do an ordinance out.
And that kind of one of the reasons I put this in here was just for that purpose. Again, there's not a lot of opposition publicly to a lot of
things. Well, when we put billboards on it as an ordinance, as a public hearing, you do get a lot of feedback. Because in general, I think most people have a negative a feeling about billboards too big or whatever, too many, whatever. Billboards aren't a real popular thing. But I know that when there's a billboard application, people aren't going to drive to Georgetown and sit in a thing about a billboard. They may not even know the signs there or whatever. I mean, I don't know, but I'm just saying. I understand that they don't go out of their way to do that, but they're not.
One of the thoughts, though, was that you, the council, have the ability to tighten that stuff up or just eliminate some of these things.
I don't mind it in a commercial district. I think one time we were even more flexible than that years ago, and then we tightened it up to just a commercial district. It's my.
These are all in commercial districts.
I know that, but my concern is as they get bigger. That's where the variant
can regulate that through your ordinance.
Through your ordinance, though, that's where you do.
I thought our ordinance did regulate it to a certain size. And then why are they coming for the variance then?
Because they're asking for an increased square footage and an increase like that. They have the right to ask.
Right,
they have the right to ask.
Right. Even if we have a new ordinance, they still have a right to ask for a variance. Any ordinance we write. Right.
And typically, whenever, just like mobile homes less than 5 acres went to 3/4,
right.
once you all establish that in your ordinance, We are have been very cautious not to set a precedent or allow exceptions for. I would say that we've probably allowed 3 or 4 on less than 3/4 of an acre.
Maybe 3.
And it was more of a sympathetic gesture.
Right. I understand a few variances getting granted, but I'm just wondering, like, we have an ordinance today that come in for a variance to go over. So if we get a new ordinance, you're still going to have a variance. Try to circumvent whatever we do. So I'm just concerned. I'm not so concerned about a huge double stack billboard on 113. I do get concerned, and the first one that I remember is going out, I think it's out 9. Was it 9 or not? I don't know. What's 18? Is it 18?
9.
9.
Was it? What up? Anyway, you're out there a little bit beyond Georgetown, all of a sudden, out in the middle of nowhere, where the heck did this come from? And now we've seen more of that. I was hoping that would be just a fluke, but it wasn't a fluke.
Well, it's one thought you could restrict by ordinance what roads that they're permitted to apply for.
Okay.
It doesn't do that now. It just says that to be commercial.
Right.
So if you put in a commercial district, plus say 113,
13.1, and
you're restricted to that, they don't have the right to apply because then it's a use variance.
Right. I'm not trying to outlaw billboards, Sam. I mean, I know Sam's going to think I'm out trying. No, I'm just outlawing oversized billboards. And we have seen variances to get the oversized.
What do they pay the county a year, Mark? You got
$10. We get
more than that.
We have a 50 cent per square foot fee when they get their sign permit and a 25 cent annual renewal based on square foot.
So they pass right good money.
Yeah, I don't have a copy of the annual report.
I'm sorry, we make a lot of money on it, Sam. You're right. Let's forget about it.
Well, if something was mishousing, at least the sign don't come out on the highway. Let that
it's food for thought. I mean, there are things, again, the council, I think, can do with these if you you are interested in further restricting them, like Lawrence mentioned.
Well, like our CR1 is only going to be on certain roads. This could be the same way.
You could even, instead of saying specific road, you could say like type of road, divided highway.
That's how our CR1.
Ever, if you're keeping notes, if you could make a note that that's something we could discuss later on.
Certain kinds of
roads. There's one thing while we're on signs that nobody's mentioned that kind of caught my attention. I think that was on Route 9. The person moved into his house or his building or whatever, and he wanted to put it directly the traffic to that place. So what it boils down to, he had the wrong wording on the sign. Sign's already there, everything's there. They had the wrong wording on the sign. Made the sign wrong.
The ordinance doesn't allow a billboard to be.
You know what I'm talking about?
I know which one you're talking about.
And I often thought in my mind that was sort of, in a way, a little bit of self-assurance. I just thought, I don't know, maybe.
Well, you made good use of it.
The point is, we've spent a lot of time on a sign because you change the wording on the sign. The signs are, everything's there.
Fortunately, that situation doesn't come up very often.
That's right. It was a rarity, yeah.
But I thought it was we spent a lot of time on it. Maybe we should.
Well, probably the board, you denied him, right, on that particular instance, if I'm not mistaken.
It did.
Right.
Did that go to the board?
Yeah.
Did go to the board. I think you said, did you say no, I think?
Yeah.
I think if you had said yes, I don't think that was one of these controversial ones and stuff. It's a fluke, like I think Rick says, and I don't think that's going to come up that often, Sam.
I think they didn't go by with them, so. Who did it hurt?
The next
hurt me. It hurts me.
Oh, okay.
The next sub issue is one that actually does come up pretty frequently. It's called contractor error. Now, back in the heyday of the real estate, it came up a lot more when everybody thought he was a carpenter or a general contractor and went out to build something, and eventually ended up with the house 6 feet over the setback, or things not built to code. All kinds of problems. The difficulty is that when the contractor then would take off, and there's no way to ever get him to repair everything. But the difficulty is that in those kinds of instances, the law considers the contractor the agent of the homeowner, which means that by definition, that difficulty was created by the homeowner, was self-created, which eliminates the possibility from a technical standpoint of getting a variance. That's a tough spot to put a property owner in, because as a lawyer, I know you can get a judgment against just about anybody, but your chances of collecting it from one of these Tom, Dick, or Harrys that call themselves a contractor are pretty slim. And you end up with the property owner, you know, possibly having to shell out all kinds of money just to pursue that unsuccessfully, or then to potentially correct the damage that the contractor has created. The board has always been sympathetic to those homeowners, despite the fact that it's contrary to the law. And I guess one of the reasons that's in here is just to point out to you that that's another area we consider kind of a gray one. And if you want to start penalizing the property owners, then I guess the board can do that. But again, those are your constituents that are
going to come. The only problem would be that once word gets out on the street that we are, you know, we're turning a blind side to contractor's error, and a lady says, "I'd love to have that, you know, thing just a little closer. Now we'll just build it." And then anyway, you'll have a lot of them. And
we're cognizant that there are probably people coming in who are making all that up and saying, Joe Smith, general contractor.
So the testimony's the key on any of these, and I guess this is where you know, after being here, you learn to pick up on certain things. And stuff.
No,
I don't know the answer.
George, they have turned them down. They have one down there. And in development, and the lady built in, had the contractor do it. Now she built 8 foot in to a 10 foot buffer. She hired this contractor. And now she came in and she needed a variance. We asked her why. She said what she wanted. We subpoenaed the contractor, having come in to get the two-story. I know it's hers and it was his. The contractor stated, this is what the homeowner wanted. She didn't care about the rest of the property. What she wanted.
And she acquired the permit and was full aware.
She got the permit. So we asked all the questions.
So her signature's on all this stuff, right. Now, I have no sympathy for anybody like that. I'm sure there are people who make mistakes. There always is. And
but hers was denied. Two months ago, we had two people down the street from her. But this is what she wanted. She had to take that one down. Cost her close to $16,000.
I have seen.
You got to go on both sides. So we do deny. Right. You don't hear those, but that did happen.
There's also been circumstances where people were doing improvements themselves, see the 40 feet, think the road bed. Yeah. You measure from that instead of the right-of-way and measure all 40 feet from the side of the road. And then all of a sudden they realize that there's a problem. And, you know, so those kind of things have occurred, too, in the past.
We hear from people from Pennsylvania that said, you know, we in Pennsylvania, we measure from the center of the road. You need to find out where your property line is and what the rules are in Sussex County.
The other thing the county could do is, if you have the manpower, and maybe this is the time of the economy that you could possibly do that, either, and I don't know the inner workings of the building code and planning and zoning or anything like that, but send somebody out so many weeks after that building permit has been issued to check it. You know, instead of waiting until it's all done, if something could be before this event, to somebody to check the property distance from the foundation or whatever before they get to the finished wall or the roof.
The difficulty with that is that you're just looking at the foundation, not looking at all the other encroachment that may be on decks and porches that are on piers and they're not there yet.
But if
we can get close. In most cases, it'll be a record.
Right, and I'm not exactly saying a one-time inspection. Maybe do it at various stages of construction, you know, to the point where, where they get to the roof overhang or something, or raise a red flag, it's too close now.
Yeah, you're saying with the foundation would give you, lead one, you know, to say that you're going to have problems later on, you could have. So they could in the in their file, they could be said, we have noted, we have warned property, and that might be a good way to catch a lot of this stuff.
But the ideal situation is not to just do it once. Send it in all aspects or phases of the construction.
Right.
Not just stop at the foundation, go back.
Well, I think if the contractor sees a guy show up on the... Now, do we inspect the foundation and do they check it for setbacks and all that stuff? Or they?
Yeah, footer, foundation, framing, and fine.
But distances, do they set? Do they do any measure for setbacks?
So typically footer and tie downs on the manufactured housing is done by my staff, and the foundation footers for construction are done by building code.
Okay. Do we know if building code actually checks what your department is setbacks?
No.
They just check to make sure the foundation's been properly poured.
They're being cross-trained in the process now, trying to cross-train the three offices together.
I had a neighbor just recently having a new house, and she was out measuring, and she says it appears they're too close, and I said, well, we'll call it. They should inspect it. I didn't realize when they did inspect the footers and foundation, I thought they would be measuring from the property lines that they have.
Yeah, that's done by the two building codes and the assessor who doesn't have anything to do with that.
Okay, well, that again, Everett, is another area I think that we could catch a lot of stuff.
Is there a location survey?
There's at final we asked for an as-built in some cases when there's a question about being too close. In the early process, the only in a flood zone where we get that kind of information.
Really?
Then I think we can curtail a lot of these variances if we got some information earlier on in the process, not in the finals. There, it's too late.
Of course, again, when you're using a tape measure and you're measuring the distances off the side, you're going to have a belly in that tape that's going to read a little further, and that's where you hit this thing again with the minors. So maybe the just do some variances, administrative variances, if it turns out it's off there. But you could still hit some problems.
We could still hit some problems, but I think if maybe there's an instrument they can buy, I'm sure there is, that you can shoot these things and tell you exactly, you know, because they're supposed to have their monuments or corners and stakes and stuff like that. But anyway, I think at the foundation, we ought to have some setbacks established at that point, that they are within, or if our inspector thinks it's too close, if they have a file, they keep a file, they could note in it. The contractor put on notice that that could be a problem. So in other words, when you get cups in front, it comes back in front of you, you say, well, you were notified. You were put on notice. So you should take a corrective action. And anyway, then you don't have much sympathy for somebody who ignored it. But anyway, that'd be a good way to, I think, catch a lot of these these
well,
people.
Well, that area is there again, to gives you some explanation about why some of these are being granted, and it may not be necessarily the perfectly legal solution, but it's really a moral judgment that the board's been making when the contractor has fouled up and left the homeowner in a tough spot. So I can't disagree with the way it's been going, but just, you know, if you guys know about it. Complicating that to some extent, and I also put that in this section, is the fact that occasionally the county messes up.
No.
Yeah, part of that is to believe.
I'm shocked to hear that.
And I'll give you an example. We had our meeting, I think it was the July 19 meeting, and I remember that the board granted 6 of 8 or 7 of 8 that night, and I saw a letter to the editor that said something to the effect, well, there they go again, back to the roll of tricks. But 3 of those 6 or 7 that were granted had implications of county problems. Somebody buys a property, and there's in one of the instances, there was a garage that was over the setback, but it had been given a CO many years ago. In fact, 2 of the 3 were that way, and the third one was a situation where the homeowner and the contractor both called the county office to find out the setback in Kings Creek for a specific improvement that was being designed, and were given apparently incorrect information. And you know, people go and build that according to that information. They certainly relied to their detriment and spent some money, and they put themselves in a tough spot. Technically, the board has the ability to deny those.
Well, you better get it in writing. I question whether they call. I mean, people tell me all the time they called up and they get bad information. I said, I don't think our employees are. Yeah.
Typically, what happens is when the application comes in, Lawrence will waive the fee on those, and that's usually the hint to the board that there's some problem in terms of the county's role. Because if we start denying those, you know, the next thing you deny them 3 times, you're going to have 3 lawsuits the following weekend. So,
well, if they have proof, I mean, but if somebody's stating that they called up and somebody said over the phone.
Oftentimes, they actually not only had the building permit, but also had the CO.
Right.
So
well,
they were given a CO.
That is our problem, and I'm sure we do make that.
Right.
But that does happen.
Really. Typically, that's the state major versus the labor.
Yeah, I just...
If Judy was in the foot...
Again, you just need to...
And the tape, you can't hold tape perfect to get that 10-foot. I tell the staff, if it's close to 10-foot, ask for an anvil. That way you know it's right.
And again, this is there because I don't think you would disagree with me that they ought to be granted those where the county is itself involved in the error. And
if it's minor.
Well, some of them aren't so minor. Some of them are 10, 15 feet, but they've got certificates of occupancy, and if they list, you know, they may have been there for 10 or 12.
There's employees of long gone?
Yeah, the CO is a pretty powerful tool. And I have a great concern with the board denying those, and then one of us is going to end up defending the lawsuit that
I agree with
people are going to file.
I do 100% agree with it.
Hi, John. While we're on the topic of contractors, on occasion, it may be as little as 1%. It's refreshing for us as a board for a contractor to come before us and requesting something before they do the building. Now, it would be nice to have a directive from you folks. If there's no opposition, if it's a minor, you know, it certainly doesn't meet the standards, but, you know, a directive from you. Should we grant that as we have in the past? If there's not any, it doesn't appear to be any problem with
you mean I fill out a form, an application, get on your docket. I'm in front of you one day, and I say, I'd like to have a five-foot setback. I haven't done it yet, or variance. I want my...
Here's why.
Mm-hmm. Now, would it have to meet a hardship and all these other standards?
Yes, mean everything. And the one standard that it will not meet is created by the applicant, because obviously they're creating it. However, it meets the other. There's practical difficulties in building any, you know, this, whatever it's needed or felt is needed any other way.
I would lean to be in agreement with working for those applications.
It would be nice for us to know how all of you feel.
I don't. Mike, do you sense any problem or Sam? I don't know.
Technically we can't approve.
We can't approve it.
Because it meets it's for the standards, but not the physical.
It doesn't meet all 5.
It meets all 5. That's what you got in. It's got to meet all 5.
We've been a very understanding, forgiving board.
Well, why couldn't that meet
because it's technically, it cannot have been created by the applicant.
And one good example of that, and I don't know how many of you have read that, is somebody wants to build a garage. But if they, to be legal, as far as the Board of Adjustment is, they would have to do it some, they have to construct that garage somewhere other than where their driveway drives into that garage.
Because of the septic, because of the driveway, because of the side of the house.
Well, I think maybe our attorney should make a definition of what from being created by the applicant really means. Others come up with a definition.
We can't change that.
That's pretty black and white.
Those definitions are state.
Well, if there's a, if the hardship could be that, like you said, there's a ditch or there's a drainage or something, and we need to put it over here, and then we would need a variance. That would be because that ditch and all these other physical things would have been the hardship. I mean, I can see how you could.
Well, and sometimes this is where legal counsel is advantageous for applicants, where legal counsel will say the applicant didn't build the house except the driveway and place the septic.
Right.
But there is a need for, you know, you can be creative.
So is it meant?
And we would really like for people to be creative.
I would say this. I would just say this. If you did approve something like that, then you need to then make sure you put down the reasons. And then I think the attorney should then step in and say, here are the reasons why this one is being granted. Do you all agree? And if you all say, yes, we do agree for those reasons, I think that I've always been told you can do pretty much anything as long as you have good reasons.
Sure.
It's like we're told when we vote yes, you better have good reasons. You vote no, you better have good reasons. So if you vote yes to do it, you better have good reasons. And I think if it's spelled out, it would be defensible. So
it's a little bit different because your standards are a little broader, you know, when you talk in terms of the general welfare and that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
The board deals with some fairly specific criteria and has to be able to, the proof has to be a lot more specific.
Well, I think of a good disclaimer added to your decision, disclosing why you voted the way you did. Make sure that's attached to it. And maybe there should be a checklist on, again, questions he asked to say why you supported that,
right,
even though it didn't meet the 5 standard.
Okay, the next one we talked about briefly, I don't know if we need to get into it in any great detail. This was the hardship application. Again, the code permits the use of a manufactured home as a second dwelling for for certain instances. We already require, as part of the process, that the applicant provide some medical certification. Usually comes from the individual's doctor, acknowledging the condition and the opinion that they need extra care or attention. Occasionally, people do come in and object to those. They will say that manufactured home is going to affect their property values and things like that. I think the board typically tries to get beyond that, just simply because it understands the consequences of not having that dwelling available for an elderly or a disabled person. So again, the standard is not terribly high, just showing that there's not going to be an adverse effect on other properties. But again, these special use exceptions, which is what this falls under, are some that are frequently granted, again, because they are permitted uses in the area and oftentimes necessary to the well-being of individuals. So,
is the second dwelling always a manufactured house?
Typically,
yeah. I mean, does it spell out that it has to be?
It's for a maximum of 2 years, so that's typically why it is. And then if the hardship continues to exist, then it can be approved year after year, as long as the hardship exists.
Does anybody check on them every 2 years?
They're all checked, and they all have to resubmit after the second year.
Once it's granted,
the time extension.
The initial approvals for 2 years, and then on an annual basis, Lawrence can give them approvals.
Okay.
If they remember it, that's the problem.
So, on a 3/4-acre parcel, somebody could request it?
Mm-hmm.
And that happens quite a bit.
And on occasion, some are overlooked, and they have to come back before the board. And we determine if the hardship exists and if it will have substantially affect adversely the uses of neighboring and adjacent properties, which is a standard of the special use exception.
Okay.
And I think we're going to see a lot more of these, obviously for economic reasons. The nursing homes are just incredibly expensive and way beyond the means of a lot of people. And this is going to be the alternative, having the second home.
So economic hardship meets our criteria?
Technically. But we have very few come in under that. It's typically the medical hardship.
And you all have recently offered some relief in the garage apartment.
Right.
But typically that's more than
now,
replacing.
We did change that so it would go just to you guys, that you can approve a garage apartment without having to do a conditional reuse. Is that right? We've done that?
Yeah, I'll tell you, I can remember one or two. They're not common at all, even though they're out there.
It's a shame, because that doesn't have to be a hardship.
Right, yeah.
You could just come in for the garage apartment, which could be an income-producing part of your property.
Which would suggest that it truly is a hardship, because they don't want the mobile home or the additional living, dwelling on their property. So,
well, maybe it's just because it's not well known. Not people know that.
How many do you get these on a regular basis?
It's surprising when we don't have one at a meeting, in all honesty.
Probably a third. So approximately a third of their cases are these type things. So when we see these high numbers, that's including these hardship cases.
This is by far the most common of the special use exceptions. This is a medical hardship situation.
I don't think it's that high.
It may not be that high.
Are they the controversial ones? Are they the ones, they don't seem to be.
Typically not.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think they're the ones that people are screaming about when they start screaming at you guys.
No, right now.
But we've been seeing a total number of, here is the percentage overall that's being approved, and these numbers are in that.
They're in that number.
And Lawrence, you are actually putting a stop order on some of these special use exceptions that get approved? I mean, do we have any statistics on how many
hardship?
Yeah, how many of these hardships are
going up? And they've had to reapply. We have one right now. It's in the process of being removed within 10 days. Because the use is non-existent then.
They are subject to abuse, obviously.
The situation changes. The person that's there to be cared for either moves on or passes on, and that has to be
removed. But do you do just a few? Do you ever catch a few? Because there's so many that have been granted. I mean, I can't imagine that at all.
I have it set up on a computer system, so we know just which number is active and which ones aren't. And there's probably, other than the ones that have done in the last 2 years, because I don't have those yet, probably less than 40.
They're actually very efficient with that stuff.
Okay, good. Okay. Just a question.
Lawrence, when those are approved, do you get the name of the person who's living in the house as well?
Okay. That's the difficulty. We had that situation whereby it had been granted by the board for the mother.
And then the father.
The mother either moved into the house, and someone else moved into the mobile, so thereby they used the employee. So they had to have one person, so they had to go back to the board.
And we've had situations where it was yet another family member that, the husband or wife and then the other.
Well, the most recent one, it was the sister lived in the unit, was helping care for
the parent in the house.
The wife in the house. The sister became ill, she moved in to the house, and the daughter and son-in-law moved into the trailer to care for them. But because it's specifically for that one person and it's referenced, and they have to go back and reapply.
But they would be allowed.
Mm-hmm. They're still there to care for them. It's not to keep getting more people in.
It's something we've done more recently, you all have done, is required a doctor's medical letter
On a renewal, we require a request from the applicant to reference the same person, and we also have a doctor's statement saying that person needs to be careful.
Right.
So.
That's been a great thing.
Okay, I'm going to temporarily skip over that next one because it gets a little bit out of the order we're going. But on the next page, the daycare, again, this is another special use exception, another very common one that we see. And again, we had one last night. We had one the meeting before. So, I skipped Swanakees and Cape Windsor for the time being. But again, this is one that is oftentimes granted. They're rarely opposed. There is certainly a need for daycare in today's society. Actually, Lawrence has the ability from his office to approve home daycare for up to, six children?
Six children of a certain age and two children during the school year for no more than 2 hours because of parents working, being able to pick them up or dropping them off. So it's like 2 hours.
Anything beyond those numbers comes to the board for a special exception, and so we're dealing with the daycare for the 12 to 14 kids typically. And once again, when you, as Everett's mentioned, when you look at the numbers, this is going to skew the numbers because these are granted almost universally. There's rarely any effect on any other property, and it's something that everybody, I think, generally agrees is necessary and desirable, and it is a permitted use in an AR1.
And they also have to go through the process with Health and Social Services, with the, if I get their name right, Family and Children.
Yeah, it's such a highly regulated area. I'm pretty confident they're doing it right.
Well, my concern is there's one near me. There's another, and I go by it every day. It's on Fred Hudson, and it is like one of the major roads getting you to and back, you know, from Ocean View to the beach and stuff. And their standard driveway. And dropping them off. They're parked on the edge of the road. It is the scariest thing. I scratch my head how something like that came through. I knew there was no opposition because there's only like one other house there. But God, is it, you know, you want to talk about a treacherous road?
If that's a concern, then the council certainly has the ability to regulate that. You can require that they.
Hope, no, I just hope that when the application came here, that you would, you know, weigh the, you know, parking, getting, making sure the kids can get in, cars get off the road. They all show up at one time. There's just no place. They're all just down along the road, and they fly everywhere. It just. Mm-hmm.
How long have I been there, George?
Oh, 5 or 6 years.
I mean, children.
Well, you turned.
I have no idea. No, I don't care about all the children. I just think it just seems like a poor location for that type of use, and I just would hope you weigh out, you know, some of these roads, and then are they improving the parking? Do they have the ability to get the people off the street?
We
answer
those questions.
Okay.
We have about 10 questions.
But if they say, yeah, we can get them off, but I know. You know.
The latest one was an example saying about the plantation. And as you well know, that's a busy area.
Oh,
busy intersection. Those people don't need any more. But we had a daycare one to go down there in the Browns Zone. Mm-hmm. Okay, we want to put this daycare down there with it. We went down and we looked at it. And so we asked them the questions. How many kids are going to come on the bus? Mm-hmm. How many parents are going to be coming in? You know, the time of the day. I take into consideration the plantation. These people already congested now.
No, yeah.
It didn't fit in that area.
Thank
well, you don't have opposition. Well, it should be there. We had a church center, didn't it? The church center, those people came. So each one come, we take that consideration. So, hey, we deny it. It wasn't needed that
they
area.
They found a good location.
Yeah, they were already there. So here's an example. But like you're saying, they're
asking questions.
Some,
I just
what is your hour of operation? Monday through Friday, Monday through Saturday, from 6 to 6, is it going to be 6 to midnight?
Right.
How many kids? You got your state license. So they have 1 to 6 children. Mm-hmm. Then if they go to level 2, which they're allowed by the state, they have up to 11 children. Well, when they go to 11 or more, then they got to hire more people to help them take care of it. Then that raises that concern, as you're saying, the highway. What's your egress, your ingress, get it in, get it out.
Yeah. Where's all the health department, where the people are? I don't know. I know this one, I see this one all the time,
right.
And it just is a glaring, I think, of an example of a probably shouldn't be located there. I'm fearful that somebody's going to get
it. It's all kids that are concerned, but they should.
I believe it's legal, yeah.
It's legal.
Yeah, I think that was legal.
You could send them the site plan review.
You can't hold a board adjustment.
It's approved. Once it's approved, it's approved.
If it's been approved,
but the board does have the power to condition it by requiring site plan approval.
They would after it's been approved again.
Approved subject to site plan.
Now,
that's true.
Not retroactively.
That's what I'm saying. You can't unring the bell.
No, what I'm suggesting is if those are legitimate concerns that all the council
people I just hope that
something
they
to
all
toss
have
into
those. And it sounds like you do. I'm sure some fall through, but anyway, that one's a glaring one.
We have 10 questions that we asked them. Remember, they're on the road, so, you know, we got to say, you know, what they're telling us to be the type of food. They want a plantation.
But see, your knowledge of the county is why you're here, right? And your knowledge of some of these roads should maybe trump what you hear. Just from personal experience.
Why don't we move on to cell towers? Okay. Okay.
Can I add something?
Sure.
Mess it all up. The ordinance allows the board to refer for question to the commission. Or refer and require a site plan to be approved by the commission before it can be developed. So,
okay.
Just want to remind
maybe in some of these instances they can,
but
way
they don't wear off, but they could.
That's something maybe Rick, you need to remind.
We can do that. Of course, that is a pretty big expense, I suspect, isn't it?
But if it's a daycare, it could be important.
In some cases, if you have, in some of the daycare, we had one that was up to 100 and something some odd kid one time.
Oh my goodness.
I think we did have.
That's like school. That's not.
I think that was one of the ones that was referred there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, certain situations are going to require. I think whether it's expensive or not, that we do it because of, for the safety, that should, you know, be the primary concern. So.
And again, the other alternative, or one other thing to, I guess you can all consider, is Lawrence already has power under the code to approve certain of them. You know, you can expand that and make that more administrative and get it out of the whole hearing process. And I assume he would have the same ability to refer it.
I'll let Everett and Lawrence, as they go over these notes, see if that's something administrative we want to deal with.
The cell phone towers are by ordinance now come before the Board of Adjustment. As an aside, the ordinance has gotten kind of old and probably is in need of review, and that may be something the council wants to consider doing. It was basically copied from Newcastle County's many years ago, I think. But we've been advised, for example, that the lighting requirements are inconsistent with what the FAA wants from cell phone towers, and it certainly is probably a worthwhile project to update that a little bit. They're oftentimes very controversial, as you might expect. And it's not in here necessarily because they're granting a ton of them. In fact, they probably have denied more cell phone tower applications than approved. But we're going to consistently see these things because the cell phone companies are under a federal mandate to provide cellular coverage throughout the country. And where they have these gaps in coverage, that's what they're applying for in Sussex County, to build the tower to bridge these little gaps. Everybody wants their cell phones, and they're certainly in use by an awful lot of people. And as I mentioned, more than 50% of all 911 calls come from cell phones nowadays. But whenever the application comes in to put one of these up and it's near anybody's dwelling, that, of course, raises hackles, and we end up with a very controversial situation. It's certainly something, if the council wanted to deal with it, you could take them over and it could be conditional uses. They wouldn't have to be special use exceptions for the Board of Adjustment, but if you had any inclination to do that, that would probably be an easy thing to do under the code.
You're just trying to get rid of
I'm trying to dump them on you.
We have a whole list of things that we could transfer to the board, too. So.
When we get these cell towers, George, you made mention a while ago, you know, if we had no one in opposition, maybe we just do this right, or if we get some. But we had the cell tower. We've got one we just had building with the ferry. Right, we had that. We had hardly no opposition, but we had a lady in the audience raise a question about, are you going to look at the information? We had packs of paper. We had just one company, 92 pages. We made 160 pages of paperwork to discuss. We tabled that and ate it for a month. You know, because in that area, in Woodland Ferry, in this area, it was stated off the ground. It didn't set in this area. You know, I don't set my backer, but we took that case and said, why didn't it take it long? And it did get turned down. So we do review them. If you think, you know, there's people there in opposition, well, they tell us that's why. The documentation, the paperwork, the area, the road, it was to be put in the front of the property, the application's in the back of the property, they didn't want to move it. So we do. And we asked them
I'm a little suspicious that the cell tower business is kind of like when we had borrow pits. Everybody wanted their own borrow pit.
Mm-hmm.
And with cell towers, I think they all want their own cell tower, because if we required a sharing of cell towers.
We do.
We do. We do.
Okay,
part of the problem is that cell towers used to be much, the devices were much more powerful.
Yeah.
And so remember the big cell phones.
Yeah.
Now everybody's got a small one that requires more towers.
More towers.
Closer together.
Closer together.
Right now they're operating in a range of about 2 miles.
About 2 mile radius now.
The ordinance requires that when they're initially built that they're capable of allowing co-location, which is the key word in there.
Well, I was just afraid maybe it was
four other carriers.
Right. A carrier who gets his own tower all of a sudden charges so much. Mm-hmm. Let's try to get around.
Well, there's probably some of that going on.
Sure,
the difficulty is, they all have their own system. So, Sprint's using this tower, this tower, and this tower, and now they've got their coverage gap here. AT&T is just the opposite. And they actually have to prove that at the hearing that they've made efforts to locate other structures, whether it be a water tower or a tall building or something like that. And they do that. They do their homework, and they present good applications.
It just seems like, do we need every phone company having their own towers, and some of them are, it's redundant, I guess, because they're all covering the same areas. And
Why did they say that? In Bethlehem Beach.
Oh, they're screaming.
Well, we had to ask them to go, they went to talk to the fire company. If they could work with the fire company, could they work with the town? And it couldn't be done. They all had met together.
So well, the fire company turned them down, just as an example, and they didn't want to use their tower. We did just get one application for an extension. It was 150 or something. They wanted to add 10 feet because they actually have four carriers already on it. By adding 10 feet, they can get stick more. A few more on, which made a lot of sense.
And so eliminate some towers.
Yeah.
So we tried to work with
them. Yeah. It's a touchy one. I know what you're...
It is.
So anyway, if you want it, just let us know.
No, we'll get back.
That's a yes?
No, we'll get back to you.
Okay. Yeah.
Do you want to hit the fields first?
More south towers.
Yeah,
give me your last utility.
I'll do that. I'll
come myself. And
I could be like a belt. So I got mine. Mm-hmm.
Just going back one page, then I put in a category called Swan Keys and Cape Windsor, and these two subdivisions—they're not alone, but they were the ones that came to mind when I was working on this. Were originally laid out or plotted as if they were going to be old mobile home parks, and the end result being most of them have 40-foot lots, which originally had very old dwellings. We're into the age of upgrading, of course, and everybody's hauling out single wides and older, smaller homes. And when you have a 40-foot wide lot and you're trying to put in a 24 or 28-foot structure, you're not leaving a whole lot of room on either side. And so we get a fairly significant number of variance application just from these two, I'll call them subdivisions alone, for these very same reasons. Oftentimes the variances are limited to just a platform for an HVAC unit or some steps or something like that, but in a lot of instances, they're also coming in with larger homes right. That...
they've started going up now.
Yeah.
Why not? Cape Windsor. Now, Cape Windsor's in fee, right? See, some right. of the...
They both are.
Both, that's what I'm saying. Both of these, see, that doesn't bother me because they're in fee. It's when we have these parks, and then we have, when the parks can be easily controlled because it's one property owner. And on Swan Keys and Cape Windsor, I can see where they've taken actually built, stick-built homes. That's a GR district, right?
Yeah, Swan you all changed the zone.
You
changed
the zone. You changed that. Changed the zone.
Swan Keys, GR, and Cape Windsor, they are.
Okay, but I can understand, those changes going on in those places. It's what I see going on in some of the mobile home parks is where I think we
that's in
that's
here
what
because
they used to be.
There are a lot of...
that's what they used to be.
Right, but they own the land. It's a different type of ownership where you got one property owner with one of the big parks, which things should be able to be controlled better. And it seems like there's why we're coming to the variance set up in the rental parks. It seems to be awkward.
Well, when they were originally a lot of them in the 70s when they were originally travel trailer parks.
Oh, I know.
Very small lots, and then people started putting.
Well, what we should have done is we should have said, okay, guys. Redraw things. You own the land. Make create new dimensions as you go through these areas and stuff.
I think we
would have solved a lot of problems because I there's one park I know of when I was a kid. The place looked neat and trim and everything was all old, right? And then now it looks crazy.
So. Well, it doesn't. But don't everybody realize that? Though. See, this is that's the problem right now. It's pre-existing, non-conforming mobile home park. It's been out here for how long? 50 years.
But that one property owner can change it. Mm-hmm. Where we can't change it in a Swan Key or a Cape Windsor, you can't change. You have the ability to tell them, make a large, if you have, create larger lots.
Mm-hmm. Combine two together, make larger lots.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We have the ability to do that. Because I'd like you guys to look real hard.
Depends on how much you want your phone to ring.
I know. Wait. I know I'm right because Sam thinks I'm wrong. Shh. Quiet.
This is here just again, so you understand. There are a lot of variances coming out of something like this because, if they're not granted, you're going to end up. I don't want to call it a slum, but you're going to end up with old, dilapidated structures that never get any attention. They're never.
But anyway, wait, Rick. Let me ask you this.
I don't think so.
Or Lawrence, somebody tell me. Lot dimensions in a mobile home park, rental park. are they're not the same as Swan Keys, where you have meets and bounds and all that stuff, right?
They are.
They are?
Because right. Swan Keys was created. The first section of Swan Keys was created before. Cape Windsor was created before, years before.
Right.
Four acres. And Cape Windsor rated the connect.
But those are fixed. Those are fixed.
They're fee simple lots.
Right, they're fixed. In a mobile home park, when somebody has a lot in a mobile home park, how fixed is that in county ordinance versus a Swan Keys, which are, I mean, I understand they're in fee and everything else. These lots aren't in fee.
If it's a new park,
what's in fee
it's got
the whole
standard
park.
Requirements. 5,000 square foot minimum, 50 foot dimension minimum, setback,
what I'm trying
square
to find,
foot coverage.
Why wouldn't we have the ability to tell that property owner to, you know, recreate a lot scheme that would accommodate these new structures that you want to put in your park because you can get more money out of them or something, whatever that is, whatever the motives are to bring the standards in. Why aren't we, or why can't we do that, Lawrence? I mean, not Lawrence, but, or maybe Lawrence, Rick, or Everett.
Rick?
Are you talking
or
about
Rob,
a mobile
or
home park?
Or Robin, do you know?
A rental mobile home park, he's talking about. Why
just a rental home park?
You'll have to get like the same size.
The lots are plotted already.
Well,
if they want
the administrative
part, variances, then you're gonna, they, maybe they will put them together.
Why can't we require them to?
I think you raise some condemnation questions when you start telling people that they have to compress their property. I don't
show
know.
Me, show me where maybe there is some case law in other areas where they.
Yeah, one of the issues you have too, you asked if lots are quote unquote set in stone. Well, if you have leases, many leases are longer term on either side, well, then yes, they are set in stone because that one in the center, you can't take him and widen that one out. You have a person on either side of them.
So, what do you do with the displaced people?
Yeah, so then you're getting.
Well, I don't know, but my question is do you have does a county have the ability to tell a landowner in a rental park to, if they had, let's say, three older ones being pulled out, to reconfigure those into two conforming lots, as opposed to having three non-conforming? Do we have the ability to require that from Lawrence's department or our department, anybody? And can we do that?
Well, if you better prove it, Gordon.
I'm asking them.
But on one because we do the.
If they're not in fee, those lots aren't in fee. They're rental lots.
I'm not going to
look into it if you could.
Yeah, I mean, I can't give you an answer.
I didn't think that, but if you would just make a note to maybe find out, because that could maybe in some instances, not all of them, I know there'll be situations where somebody, you know, we can't do it, but when they can and Lawrence has the ability, he should make them put in conforming lots for that big double wide now. Because of safety and the welfare of the people who live there. Stuff like that.
I guess all we can start doing is start denying it.
Yeah.
Start denying and then we can have to do something with that then.
Yeah.
That's one way we can do it.
That's one area you can crack down on. Smaller versions.
We can start denying all that stuff.
The only other separate category I had, it wasn't my intention to limit the discussions to these areas, but just the things that I thought of. I read some things or heard some things about somebody complaining, geez, there's a lot of appeals nowadays, that must mean that things are going badly. I've been the board attorney for 12 years, and there are no more appeals now than there were the first year that I started. There are always a handful being appealed at any given time. Anytime you give the right to appeal to a party that does not prevail, their parties are going to take advantage of it, and that's what happens. The fact of the matter is there are more appeals taken from cases which the board denies than from those which it approves. And frankly, the great majority of the appeals that are taken are affirmed by the Superior Court when it gets to them. And I don't say that to toot my horn, but it's just anytime you appeal a decision from a lower body or a lower court or an administrative agency, it starts out with certain presumptions of validity. And the courts generally give a great deal of discretion to the members of the lower board or court or whatever. So. There are two pending right now, which is pretty typical. One from the approval of a cell tower, and the other from the denial of an application for a variance. So those will wind their way through the courts.
Yeah, the one is a homeowners association basically taking on a decision. What's the other one?
The other
just
is
an individual.
Yeah, individual property owner who wanted a variance and was denied down in the Fenwick area.
He was denied. So he's
and he is the property owner appealed. Yeah.
Okay. My only thought, like I said earlier, I think it's the cost. Many people will not appeal because of the cost that's incurred to go to that court.
I don't deny that, but I just don't think it's fair to just say every time there's an appeal, that means there must have been a bad decision, because that simply is not the case. The courts have pretty much said that.
Yeah.
Now, George, you're talking about, you know, ordinances and suggestions. So when I had earlier, some of these ordinances, you know, you want to look at some of them. Some of them you can change or you can tweak or whatever to give us the right tools. But, you know, I've got a gentleman that I think would help you. And I know you used to be a county employee that would help you. He's here with us today. He had the King, his wife had our about 6 or 7 or 5. But he's working on the signs and he's working with Lawrence and everybody. He speaks highly and he's dedicated to the county. That maybe that's what you need to do is sit down and get someone to look at him for you to help you.
That's not a bad suggestion. I mean, if you guys, as a board, if you're all in agreement with that and make that suggestion to the county council,
okay.
I think that, and maybe put it in writing on some of your letterhead, and we'll bring it up at one of our meetings. It makes sense that maybe that individual could work with Everidge, Rick, and Lawrence, and bring it all together and report back to us.
Well, he's worked with Lawrence. He spoke highly of Lawrence.
We're talking about the two different people.
No, I'm talking about Mr. Butler. He worked with him.
I know.
Okay, and he helped us sign orders, right? And he worked with him. He's worked with Rick. So here's the gentleman. You know,
no, I agree. Now, who's supposed to be here? He's back here.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
sure.
Got somebody that would help you then.
If you make that request,
okay.
And like I said, formally make a request to the county council, and I think that maybe we might look at. We may invite that individual in and ask him what his thoughts are about pulling all these together and the notes that Everett has made and Rick have made that we could come together with some ways we could do administratively, make some improvements and some ordinances. And those two things ought to put a fix to a lot of our problems.
Right.
Okay. Or the perception.
Do you feel that way?
No, I'm agreeing.
I think that's
time things change. We've only done it the same way for, 45 years?
And that's what we will do. We will put together a list for the Lawrence. Rick and I will work together. We'll go through each of these items. We'll look through different potential ways that we can do some administrative things and then bring a proposal to you. And if there's nothing else, any discussion, I know Rick's gone through his item, I think that it would be appropriate, Mr. Vice President, to adjourn this if there was a motion.
We'll accept a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Thank you for coming.